Hello and welcome to episode 64 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a special focus on statistical analysis. The Boston Celtics have just beaten the Washington Wizards in Game 7 of their series, and so finally, the other side of the Eastern Conference playoff bracket is decided. The Cavs will fly to Boston tomorrow, and Game 1 is on Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. on TNT. In today's show, we will discuss the deciding Game 7, how the Cavs match up against the Celtics, and we'll catch you up on the latest gym activities of your favorite Cavs players. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan now living in San Francisco. My co-host is Arnav Chabra. Arnav is a graduate student at MIT, of course living in Boston, which I imagine is a pretty excited place right now. How's it going, Arnav?
I'm doing well. Do you think I should go to these games? The first two?
Yeah, I mean, if money weren't an object, definitely. Although I will say going to NBA games is a little bit tough from a analyzing perspective. It's just different.
Oh, it's more for the experience.
Right.
But then again, like I feel like in an away setting, it's not as fun because everybody's rooting against your team. So,
yeah, I have some experience in this. I went to games 2 and 7 of the finals last year.
And, oh, you went to game 2, that's right, the beatdown.
Yeah, I have to say that the experience was sort of roundly awful. The end of game 7 was amazing, and I like would go to 100 losses just to get those, like, just to get that half an hour of the last, you know, 2 minutes of the game, and then, you know, the 25 minutes after that. I mean, it's intense, and it's not friendly, so... Yeah, I don't know if I would recommend it, but if they win, and I expect them to be winning, it'll probably be more fun.
You know what? I think I'll pass just because the last home game that I went to in the playoffs was when like Kevin Love got his shoulder ripped out.
So. Oh, right.
I'm
not sure how much agency you have in what happens on the floor, but for the superstitious listeners out there.
It's just a bad memory, you know? It's not really superstition per se, but...
Yeah. Okay, did you watch the game today?
I watched the first three quarters. Fourth quarter, I saw that they went up by like 13, and then I just turned it off because I assumed that would be it.
Okay, all right. We should unpack that, but just a couple meta things first. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. After our last show, we had more contact with listeners than ever before. I don't know if I told you about this, Arnav, but unfortunately, it wasn't with words of praise or clever questions. It was to complain about my voice on our last show.
I think even I mentioned that, right? I think it sounded a little deeper than usual.
You mentioned it before we started recording, and I thought you were just, I don't know, not hearing me right or something, or I thought it was allergies. I don't know what I thought it was, but yeah, it was messed up. It's better today, right?
Yeah. It's the usual.
It's the usual manly amazing. Yeah, timber.
Exactly.
So if you want to contact us, you can at those places. And we love hearing from you guys, so please do. All right, so, the Wizards did get close a couple times in the fourth quarter, but John Wall was basically a zombie out there. He missed his final 10 shots. He was 8 of 13 at one point. He finished 8 of 23. And, if he would have made half of those, then they would have won. I don't know... I don't know what they should have done, right? They got to within, I think it was 6, and that might have been a good time to try to get John Wall some rest, but then the Celtics went on another run, and you don't want to bench Wall then. So, yeah, they sort of got stuck. And
Away game sevens in general are pretty tough, especially like when you're having to play 44 minutes, which is what John Wall ended up playing, and you play a style like he does, which involves a lot of running in transition. It's just hard to expect. Like, I mean, you have to be tired by the end.
He is so fast up and down the court. Yeah. But yeah, I think that, jogging up and down the court and sprinting up and down the court, it's like non-linear, right? So if you're sprinting, it's actually way more tiring. Yeah. And yeah, and he looked it.
I feel like Cavs fans have a bit of they're a bit spoiled by watching LeBron play like heavy minutes and still be good at the end of games.
Yeah.
It's just not that common. Like, if you watch James Harden, you know, in that game 5 where he played just even 43 minutes or something, mm-hmm. he looked tired by the end, and he was making really bad decisions by the end.
Yeah, and for all the screaming we do about LeBron's energy levels and, you know, body posture and that kind of stuff, I mean, he is really good at modulating his energy in such a way that he, you know, he has some gas at the end. And yeah, just another thing that LeBron is basically the best in the league at. The Wizards also have the problem that their bench is really, really bad.
They were a huge positive when their starters were in, and they were a huge negative when their bench was in. I think they ended up getting outscored by like 7 points in the entire series or something.
They were up 3 coming into today and they lost by 10. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a 7. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's, and that's a 7-game series. So that's like, you know, 1 point per game. This was basically a very evenly matched teams, and one of the teams ended up winning just because it had home court.
Yeah, I mean, somebody had to win. The home team won every single game. I was impressed with Marcin Gortat. You know, he didn't have like a great box score tonight, but when he's out of the game, they're sort of helpless on offense because they run that pick and roll with Gortat like basically every time down the floor. And when they take him out, they miss the screens offensively, and then defensively, they
Centers are just so bad. Like, they were playing Ion Mahimi, who just didn't look. I think he's been injured for a while, so like he didn't look right at all.
Yeah. Jason and for some reason, Kelly Oubre didn't play tonight. I don't know why.
Yeah, that I think, yeah, that's weird.
6 seconds. So he
that
was
is
not.
So weird. Is it hurt? I feel like it's because they would have booed the heck out of him, but why not just play him?
Like, yeah. I mean, they boo you because you've done things to damage the opponent's team, which is what you want. So.
And like, I mean, yeah, it's game 7. Like, you got to play your best guys. It's really weird. I don't know.
Yeah. I mentioned this, I think, before the series started, but I was impressed by Bradley Beal in the first round and really all season. He's a strong player.
I'm a little surprised that his RPM isn't that great, but maybe it's just...
Yeah, I think Otto Porter's getting credit for some of the work that Beal's doing, but...
It's totally possible.
By RPM, anyway. But yeah, Beal, I mean, he's decent defensively, and, you know, he's basically elite offensively. Tonight, he was 12 of 22, 38 points, 5 of 10 from 3. Just wasn't enough.
I was a little disappointed in this series and pretty much in the entire postseason with John Wall's defense. I feel like he has taken...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's actually taken a step back or if he's just not doing it in this postseason just because he has such a huge offensive load. I mean, he played 44 minutes. It's hard to do. Be a great defender and a great offensive player.
And yeah, and chasing Isaiah Thomas around is not... can't be fun. But, you know, if he could have done just even a little bit more on Thomas, it seems like... I mean, they run that back screen with Isaiah Thomas constantly, and John Wall loses him every time.
And even like nice. The back cuts, he just wasn't like Avery Bradley got a couple of cuts, back cuts on him. And it's,
yeah, it'd be nice if the Cavs could try to do that with Kyrie Irving, but Kyrie and JR both don't really do that very often. They could.
I mean, back cuts and stuff, or
yeah,
yeah. I feel like they don't move off the ball that much.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter because Isaiah Thomas is the opposing punt cutter, not John Wall. But yeah, I don't know what else to say. I mean, I'm not that impressed with the Celtics.
Yeah, honestly, like they had Al Horford shooting like 61% from 3 or something ridiculous, and it took them 7 games to beat this.
Yeah, 2 of 2 again tonight.
I'm not buying his 3-point shooting. I'm sorry, like. He's a career, 33% 3-point shooter, maybe even less. Like, yeah. Let me look it up. But
the Celtics continue to get just abused on the board. So it was tonight, the Wizards had 43 rebounds. The Celtics had 30.
Yeah, I was looking at their rebounding percentage, mm-hmm. just like for the individual players, and they don't have a single one above 12.7, and that's Al Horford. So he's like, he's their best rebounder, period. And Cavs have like, you know,
he's their center. He should be. He just isn't a very good center. He's not good at rebound. I mean, look, he's not quite strong enough. You know, he doesn't really have like the body and the tools to do it. But also offense and the way that the Celtics on offense, he stands outside the line a lot. So he's not really around to get offensive rebounds. And on defense, They run pick and rolls with him, or he switches on pick and rolls a lot, so he ends up being a little bit far away from the hoop. So part of it's their system, but also some of it is just his attitude. Like, he just doesn't have the moxie that someone like, or the drive, I guess, that someone like Tristan Thompson has. And unfair to compare him to Thompson, but
yeah, numerically speaking, we have three guys that are better than that in this postseason, so like, we should be better on the boards by a lot.
Well, yeah, and rebounding percentage is tough because, yeah, if you have one guy that's getting a ton, it's hard for other folks. So having three dudes that are all better than their best is a material difference. And the Cavs abuse them that way in the regular season. So yeah.
It's been a common theme whenever we've played them, and I think I don't expect that to change.
Yeah.
Cavs have deteriorated a little bit on the boards because their guards have just not been doing their job. Like, for example, look at this. J.R. Smith has a 3.9 rebounding percentage. That's lower than Kyrie Irving. That's lower than Darren Williams.
Yeah, I mean, the ball will just fall to you.
More than everyone else, basically. Yeah, exactly. So I do think some of it's just because he boxes out pretty well and doesn't actually go for the rebound, but you can't
be
that bad.
Some of it's sample size, too. Is that for the regular season or for the playoffs?
No, this is all for the playoffs, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a sample size thing there.
Yeah. Yeah. And turnovers-wise, I think Cavs have been a little not too great, to be honest with you. Like, LeBron's turnover ratio in continuation with what we saw in the regular season is a little too high for my liking. Like, he has assisted turnover ratio of 1.63, whereas, like, someone like Kyrie is, like, close to 3.
Right. Yeah. I mean, LeBron handles the ball significantly more, although not that much more. Like, if you look at their touches and passes per game, LeBron's like probably 30% more than Irving, and his turnovers are way more than 30%. Although the passes that LeBron attempts are a little bit different than Irving.
He also playmakes more than Irving does. Maybe not so much in the playoffs this season. I think he's cut down on that a lot, but because he's shooting so well that he hasn't had to.
What do you mean by playmakes?
Like, he's responsible for setting up so many guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying assisting directly, but just like setting up the initial play, which Kyrie, except for this final round, he has been basically, his job has been to score the ball whenever he gets it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But in a couple of games, he got double digits assists, right? Or did he have 9, 12, 12? I can't remember.
He had 9, 10, 10 or something, or maybe 12, 10. I don't know. But it was by far his best three-game or four-game stretch. Pretty much
from a passing perspective.
Yeah. Not so much from an efficiency standpoint, but I do expect that to change.
Trying to figure out what order I want to talk about things. So we should talk about the Cavs-Celtics series, but do we want to talk about the series in the West first, or what order should we do?
Let's get that out of the way first, I think. Then we can
end. So did you watch the game yesterday?
I did. It was a very interesting game. It was a sort of a tale of two halves, you know. It's maybe not two halves, or like 2.5 quarters and then 1.5 quarters.
2.5 quarters and 1.5 quarters. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there were some signs that the Spurs were fading a little bit even before Kawhi got hurt.
But it was a 23-point lead. The point he got injured, they had a 23-point lead. After that, they got outscored by 25, I think, or something. Yeah, 25. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm not saying like the Spurs or the Warriors wouldn't have closed the gap. I think we've seen enough of the Warriors to say that they're not going to get blown out like this without. But I think if Kawhi stays, I don't see a way the Warriors win that game. I'm not saying the Warriors would be suddenly underdogs in the series or something. I still think they would be favored to win the series. But that game, I just don't see how you come back with Kawhi.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Warriors were probably like 85% before the series. And at that point, yeah, I mean, if they won game one by 20 points, I probably would have bumped it all the way down to like, you know, 65 or something.
And it's not just the game one. It's now he can't play game two, most likely.
Right, of course. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's in my mind. Yeah, I mean, if it was 85 before game one, it's like, I don't know, probably 90 now, maybe even higher because we know Kawhi won't be playing in game two.
Yeah.
Did you think that the play that he was hurt on was a dirty play?
You know, it's interesting. At the time when I saw it happen in real time, I definitely did not. That was not the thought that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. But watching the replay, and I saw a couple of screenshots. I don't know if you've seen these, but somebody superimposed the moment he jumped, Kawhi jumped off the floor. Yeah. And then when he landed, because he was fading away, so it was not just like an up and down play, right? Yeah. So he was actually moving backwards. So somebody superimposed the beginning of that play onto the end of that play. And it was very clear that he went back at least like 4 feet. And the exact same happened with him. What's his face? Zaza Pachulia. So like there was basically no reason for Zaza Pachulia's legs to be right underneath Kawhi's. Like they should have been much farther away, especially where he started. And yeah. Looking back at the slow motion, like you can kind of see him just like sliding it all the way at the end. And I would be much more likely to give him the benefit of the doubt if he didn't have the, you know, the dirty background. Like if you can just go to YouTube and find all these clips about this guy doing all these dirty things. So,
yeah. Did you hear Greg Popovich's rant today?
I did. I mean, he's the coach. That's his job, right? Like,
yeah, I thought it was pretty articulate. Like
he's an articulate guy, I feel like.
Yeah, he is. I wonder if he'll get fined for that. Are you allowed to basically accuse opponents of being dirty?
Yeah, I think as long as you don't say anything about the league, right? I think the league is where they draw the line.
Yeah. My thoughts on the replay are this. So I haven't seen the Zapruder film with like, you know, pixel by pixel detail. I did see what I saw, what, you know, in the 10 times I've seen the replay is Zaza contested and then he landed and then he takes like a little bunny hop forward to get even closer.
That's the thing. So he
and
was,
that's the damning part.
Exactly.
That's the part that's really too much for me now. You know, okay. So I agree. That's a dirty, that's, you know, quote unquote dirty. How does that compare to somebody's coming in for a layup and you just karate chop them across the arms to stop them from getting an easy dunk?
It's an interesting point. I think both of those are pretty bad in general. I don't know which one's worse. I feel like depending on the karate chop, because what a lot of guys do is like when they do try to hack someone like that, they also hold that person to make sure they don't fall into the ground, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that, but like a lot of times, like they'll just wrap the person up that way that person doesn't get hurt.
There's sort of cleaner way. Look, it's a spectrum, right? And there's you know, there's the good and the bad, and then there's a whole lot of gray in between. And yeah, I don't know how many times a game or a series, something like what Zaza did occurs. The reason why, like we're dissecting it is because of the result, which is the, you know, Kawhi sprained his ankle and now is sort of questionable, I guess, for maybe even game three. Who knows? They get a huge break between games two and three.
Yeah, it's like a three day gap.
Yeah. So hopefully he's good to go in game three and they can steal one of the games at home. But yeah, I just don't know. I remember debating this with you about the Olynyk play at the time. Like when Olynyk injured Kevin Love, There was a lot of outrage and you're like, oh, it's just an obvious armbar. This is like a terrible thing. And it was dirty. I just don't know, like on the spectrum from 0 to 100, where these things sort of fall based on stuff that happens every game. I don't really have a strong feeling on that.
Hard to say about the Olynyk one, because that one's more sort of in the rebounding, but this one, the undercutting, it's been outlawed by the league for a while, right? Like,
oh yeah, sure.
I mean,
it's definitely a personal foul. Yeah. Maybe it's a flagrant foul. I don't actually know what the rules on undercutting people, on undercutting jump shooters are. But yeah, it's just unfortunate. It's such a bummer because it's interesting. The Warriors have sort of become the villains in the NBA narrative now.
Yeah, and LeBron's going to be America's team now. So
yeah, no, it's great. It's nice. But yeah, I mean, Twitter and Reddit and, you know, everywhere I looked today was sort of outraged, except for I mentioned this on Twitter last night. So the game ended yesterday and I was just sitting on my couch sort of sulking. And I live in San Francisco, so the local post-game show comes on. And the local post-game show is, you know, a bunch of Warriors fans. And yeah, all of them were explaining like how clean they thought that Zaza play was. And it was a little tough to stomach. Yeah, I don't mind that it happened. It's the denial that it was, you know, a little bit lame.
Yeah, you got to acknowledge like that. And that was sort of the deciding factor, right? Like, I'm not saying the comeback wasn't good, but it's still at the same time, like, it's hard to ignore that they were up 23 and just went down.
Look, it takes a huge amount of the sheen off of it, right? Like, beating a JV team is easier than beating a varsity team.
Exactly.
And the like, Spurs just aren't as good without Kawhi.
And, like, look at Kawhi's numbers before. He had an 80 true shooting percentage up to that point, and he was basically getting whatever the hell he wanted against KD, against whoever.
Is he the second best player in the NBA now?
I don't know if he was this season, but I think going forward he will be. This season it was a little it's tough to adjudicate because a lot of people had great seasons, but
yeah,
I think going forward I would want him. If I want to win a playoff series, I'll take him number two after LeBron.
I agree with that. I'd like to see his passing get a little bit better, but
I think he will. That's the thing.
I think he's so good defensively. And I also just sort of like, I like his persona.
I think his offense is so good too. I feel like it's a little underrated just because he's known for his defense. But the guy has like 68 true shooting percentage so far.
Yeah,
and he's scoring like 27 a game or something ridiculous. That's just incredible.
If they would have won last night, you could make a reasonable argument that he had been the best player in the playoffs so far.
I think it's tied right now between him and LeBron. That's the crazy part. And LeBron's been ridiculous, too. 34 points a game, 67 true shooting percentage.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, look, if there was a game tomorrow, I'd take LeBron. And not just because Kawhi would have to play on one leg. Because I think LeBron
also plays a few more minutes than he does.
Yeah.
Because he has that
going. There was an analysis. Was it Kevin Pelton that did the analysis of this?
Yeah, I think he posted the comparison. And I think LeBron was number one.
Yeah, so he wrote an article on ESPN Insider about who the MVP of the playoffs was so far. And I guess Kawhi's win shares per 48 are slightly higher than LeBron's, but LeBron had played so many more minutes per game that his total win shares were higher.
I think he was using WAR, but it's,
whatever the numbers were, like basically on a per minute basis, Kawhi was like marginally better, but LeBron was playing significantly more minutes per game, which made LeBron significantly more valuable.
Anyway, if your team doesn't do well when you sit, it's important for you to play the extra minutes.
Yeah, and the Cavs are pretty incompetent without LeBron. One other thing on the Warriors-Spurs series. Two other things. The first is, so Andre Iguodala, like basically, he didn't play the entire second half, and he didn't play much in the first half. He got an MRI today, and apparently there's no structural damage, but I think he's doubtful for game two.
Is it questionable? I don't know if that's questionable. It's different than doubtful.
It is different. There's like some official... I don't know why. They should just give percentages. That would be awesome.
He's 32% like to play. You're unlikely to play, and questionable is like it'll be a game time decision, right?
Yeah. In the NFL, questionable is supposed to be 50-50, I think. And doubtful is like 80% or something.
Okay, yeah. I think that's what it is here, too. But
And the last thing is, so what do you think? Let's say Kawhi is fully healthy for starting in game three. What do you think? Warriors in five?
I think they'll have a 3-1 lead at that point, right? Like, I don't see... And I just don't think they can make that comeback because I feel like Warriors are too good to lose three in a row again. Yeah, I think maybe 5 or 6 Warriors. I think Spurs can maybe win 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 or 6, I'd say. Probably 5.
Yeah, maybe I think 5 or 6.
Maybe 6.
I think 5 or 6, probably 5, because I don't think they can win 3 and 4 at home. And I don't think they can win game 5 on the road. And with those two things.
Know. If Kawhi is healthy again, like if he's not, then.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah,
I'm not saying it's. Yeah. It's not out of the realm.
They were up 23 on the road yesterday, so it's possible.
Steph and KD had great games. Like one had what? One dropped 40, one had 34, something ridiculous.
Yeah, and apparently it was the first time in the conference finals that two teammates had scored. 70 plus points since, I don't know, a while ago. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Kyrie and
LeBron and Kyrie did it in the finals. After these games, the stats guys come up with some really esoteric stuff.
ESPN stats and info thing is like once in a while it has something interesting, but like most of the time it's just super esoteric, super small samples.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you have to add like on a Tuesday after it rained, right, to get it so that it's limited. So anyway, all right, enough on that series. So the Cavs have had I see this reported two different ways. The Cavs will either have had 9 days off or 10 days off, depending on how you count. The last time they played was May 7th. The next time they play will be May 17th. 17 minus 7, as far as I know, is 10. So they will have had 10 days worth of minutes between games, but they will have only had 9 full days where they're actually resting. And the 9 days off, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, I'm being sort of pedantic here. So the 9 days off the Cavs get is the most in franchise history, and it's the most LeBron James has ever had in his postseason. They've had 8 a bunch of times, so it's not like this is a ton more. But yeah, this is a long break. Is rest good? Is rest bad? What do you think?
I think everything I've seen from this team indicates that rest is good. So I would be very surprised if rest ends up. Maybe because they're on the road, they can drop game one or something because they're rusty. Because like the crowd will be loud, and if they're not shooting, it's possible one game might affect them. But again, like I think Celtics will be pretty overmatched. That I think we can just sort of out-talent them.
Yeah, the Celtics looked a little bit tired today, and they had 2 days off between their last game and this one. So, and this will be just 1 day off. Although it's sort of a bummer they don't have to fly anywhere, but.
Now I have to fly. Yeah.
Do
you worry about home court at all in this series or not having home court?
Well, look, I think home court really matters. I just think the Cavs, I mean, we haven't gotten into the prediction segment yet, but I think home court really matters, but I think the Cavs are sufficiently better that they can overcome that typical, road court disadvantage.
And I feel like if you're good enough to sweep, which I don't know if the Cavs can sweep them just like they have other teams, maybe it'll be a 5-game series, but if you're good enough to sweep, then I think home court doesn't matter at all, right? I think I've talked about this before on one of the pods last year, but if you're good enough to sweep, I would actually prefer to not have home court because then you get your final 2 games on your own home floor, which in my opinion are harder than the first 2 games because by that point, teams have made adjustments. And you're a lot closer in terms of performance. So you would want to have the later games on your own home floor.
If you're going for a sweep, yeah, I totally agree. Sweeping is hard. I mean, even if you have an 80% chance of winning every game.
Yeah, it takes 84% actually, to be 50.
Yeah, an 80% chance gets you to a 41% chance of sweeping. It's just not... Sweeping is really hard, and it's sort of stunning how often LeBron has done it. Did you see the video of the Cavs dancing and working out again?
I don't know. Was this last week or this week? I've seen a lot of stuff. But
yeah, it was last week. They got the DJ again.
And I saw that.
Are on the Versa Climbers again.
You know, it's good they're having fun.
I totally agree. I saw an interview with Kyrie Irving. I think it was today. He said one thing I think you won't love, which is he was admiring John Wall and the guts it took to take that 3 at the end of game 6.
Was he admiring John Wall?
Yeah. Okay. He was like, oh, that shot takes guts is what he said.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
That's true.
It wasn't the best shot, but I feel like it was a broken play. I think I mentioned this to you. It was a broken play and they wanted to get the... They wanted to leave time on the clock for the offensive rebound, so I was okay with the shot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not actually really okay with that. It went in, so like I'm going to sound like an idiot here for saying he shouldn't have taken it, but
then like
they were down 2 on at home, and
sure, but
there was like 7 seconds left on the clock, right?
Yeah, but it was a broken play, right? Because the problem was it was supposed to go to Bradley Beal on the other corner. But he couldn't find him. I think Otto Porter was inbounding, so he couldn't find him. So John had to basically run to essentially preclude the violation, which was about to happen. So he picked up the ball. At that point, I feel like nobody was open. Maybe Beal was kind of open, but he was too far, and I think it could have led to a turnover.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with it? Because the thing is, you want the offensive rebounding chance, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he could have drove in, and then if he misses, then it's like 1 second left instead of 3 seconds, so...
Yeah, and to his credit, he got the shot up, and Bradley was sagging a little bit off for some reason, probably because he thought he was going to drive.
Yeah.
So anyway, it went in. So anyway, Kyrie Irving said he liked that. He also said the main thing I wanted to bring up was that they were asking him, you know, how much effort people were expending. And he's like, oh, some guys are at like 25%. Some guys are at like 75%. He said they're sort of getting antsy. And they're running, they're like practicing running plays, but that like oftentimes they're not even shooting as part of practicing running the plays. And he says,
wait, you know, why not shooting?
I don't know.
How can you injure yourself?
I wasn't able to ask Kyrie that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then Tyronn Lue said a couple interesting things today. Well, go ahead. Were you going to say something about not shooting?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, I understand not scrimmaging too much because you're worried about getting injured, but shooting shouldn't really be a problem. Like, you're not shooting with resistance. You're just shooting. Like, how can you get injured? Maybe you can pull a tendon or something. I don't know. I just don't see the problem there.
Yeah, maybe the not shooting doesn't have anything to do with taking it easy. Maybe the not shooting is to like make sure they're focusing on how to execute the play or something. I don't know.
Yes. Okay.
I'm wildly speculating. I have no idea. I'm like coming up with a derivative on like a thing that Kyrie Irving said in passing.
Yeah.
Tyronn Lue had an interview today. He said, I know our team is anxious to play. Korver and LeBron, those guys are talking about it. So our guys are just anxious to play and ready to go out there. Sort of a nothing quote. I think they got a little bit sort of gun shy. So Eddie Tavares, whose first name is Walter, by the way. Did you know
that? Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Anyway, Eddie Tavares apparently broke his hand in practice, and it was while they were running a 5-on-5 scrimmage. Actually, Irving said, I understand how important it is. I was about to come out and play 5-on-5, and the incident he's talking about is when Tavares hurt his hand. Happened 3 seconds later. Nah, I'm not for scrimmaging right now until the game. So, yeah, I think they were probably maybe a little bit over-conservative before, and now they're just being, like, super careful.
And, yeah, like, it's kind of scary when one of your teammates breaks his hand during the scrimmage. And
yeah.
Basically, though, it's kind of like the Paul George incident, right? Like, once that happened, like, Kevin Durant just backed out of
USA. So. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know what the risk is until something happens, and then you probably overestimate the risk. But
yeah, you have a tangible reason, though. I think it's just sort of
it casts it into like sharp relief when something like that happens. Apparently, during last year's run to the championship, the Cavs like started 8-0 in the playoffs, and the players would scrimmage occasionally then, but he would make them wear knee pads and elbow pads. Which is something I guess he learned from Stan Van Gundy when he played in Orlando. I thought that was sort of interesting, but apparently they're not doing the pads thing this year. But yeah, just different things. There's one other quote from Lou here. He said, you got to keep them engaged and, you know, show them new things. I've got to trick them at times, but they've been pretty locked in and we've just got to continue to do what we do. It is what it is. And we just got to continue to work on what we need to get better at. And then whoever we play, we just got to be ready.
Yeah, seems fine.
Yeah, I guess. The final thing that Lou said, he said this like a week ago, but they were asking him about the handshakes that the Cavs do. And he joked, I wish we could remember some of our defensive schemes that well. I thought that was a pretty good quip from Tyronn Lue. The Cavs.
It's true, though.
Yeah, it is. But I think it's a false dichotomy to say that they're too busy practicing their handshakes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's stopping them from.
I think he was just trying to be
funny. He was just joking. But yeah, no, it would be nice if the Cavs didn't get lost. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Like, I was watching this Wizards-Celtics game, and there was an ATO play in the fourth quarter. It was a six-point game. And the Celtics come out and run just like this super easy play that gets them a layup. And it's just like, how? It just doesn't make sense. Like, everybody should be like totally locked in and playing their hardest. Everybody has brain farts. You just have to like try to make it so that you do them 7 out of 10 times instead of 8 out of 10 or whatever. Or I don't know what the numbers are, but you know, you just, you know, you hope with a large enough sample size, the right stuff shines through.
Question for you. Do you think,
go ahead.
Would you have preferred Washington or Boston in this matchup?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we addressed this so many times and my opinion flip-flopped so many times.
I mean, they're evenly matched, I feel like, right? Like, these teams are pretty close.
The teams are so close.
Yeah.
You know, given that they're so close, you might say, like, oh, well, you should obviously take the Wizards. Like, the Cavs would have home court advantage against the Wizards. And if the teams are equal, then, yeah, it should obviously be the Wizards. Well, the counterargument to that would be the Cavs played much better against the Celtics during the regular season this year. And on paper, they would appear to match up against the Celtics much better. So even though they're on the road to start the series there, you know, maybe the Celtics would be better. I'm so on the edge on this one that I don't even really know if I.
Yeah, I don't think there's a correct answer. I feel like it's more about preferences. For me, I feel like the Celtics, now that I think about it, play a little more like the Warriors than the Wizards do. Like, the best thing about the Wizards is that they run in transition, which is exactly what the Warriors love to do. So that would be the similar aspect there. But I think with the Celtics, they generate a lot of open threes. I think they were the third. They took the third most threes in the regular season, or something like that. And
they're third in the playoffs. I looked that up earlier. They're getting off like 13.3 a game, including today's game. And the Cavs are at like 14.1. And exactly. I don't remember if Cavs are number one or not anymore. But yeah, they're close.
They're taking a lot of threes, which is kind of like what the Warriors do. Maybe not as much this season as last season, but still. And they generate a lot of open looks, which is, again, what the Warriors like to do. So I think it would be good practice for the Cavs to play against someone like that. And also, they have those like small ball lineups, you know. Like, Al Horford isn't good as Draymond Green, but he can at least be a pseudo
entire
Draymond
team
Green.
Is a small ball lineup,
he can be kind of like pseudo Draymond Green, and we can try to match up against that. So
yeah, I think that's a good take, right? Like, to the extent that the Cavs, let's say for sure they're going to win this series, the Celtics could be good practice for playing the Warriors. I mean, they're nowhere near as good, but yeah, chasing Isaiah Thomas and like game planning for him is similar to the plans are a little bit different, but it's similar, at least, you know, in a lot of ways, to chasing Steph around.
And it's similar because you can't trap either, because for the Warriors, Draymond Green is going to be the outlet, right? And he is a good passer. And same thing with Al Horford. He's a good passer. So, yeah. The only difference is, like, the Warriors have better three-point shooters, and they also have Kevin Durant, but...
Right.
You gotta live with something.
Yeah. Yeah, we can worry about the Warriors when we get there. Do you think that there's, like, a chance that the Cavs could, like, take one into the chin here in game one and, you know, lose game one somehow, and then this will suddenly become like sort of a scary series?
I mean, is it a scary series if you lose one game one? I don't think so.
Right? I really, really, really won't like it, and I'll be panicked in the time, but objectively, no, losing game one is not.
Yeah,
losing game one on the road is not
feeling.
The end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll be fine. Yeah, I think they will drop one game here in the first two games, and I think it might be game one, so.
Ooh.
Hopefully people are ready for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't be ready for it, but I acknowledge that it could happen.
Again, I think the Cavs are good enough to sweep them, but my issue is both of these teams take like 40% of their shots from three-point range, right?
Yeah. Yes, there's a lot of variance there
that can happen just because both of the teams do. We could blow them out. I'm not saying they're going to blow us out, but they can at least be good enough to win a game by like 2 or 3 points or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's say you're like massively outplaying them, but, you know, for whatever reason, you're only up 12 in the third quarter. And then suddenly the Celtics make three threes in a row, which is basically exactly what happened to the Wizards today. The Wizards were up, I can't remember what, but they were up, I think they were up by eight.
They were up by six. Eight or six in the third quarter.
Yeah. And the Celtics made three threes in a row. And then it's like, okay, well, and now the crowd's into it and foaming at the mouth. And, you know, it's tough. But the Celtics, to my eye, and my eye is strongly based on RPM, really have sort of six good players. Jay Crowder, Al Horford, Isaiah Thomas, Olynyk, Smart, and I'm forgetting one. Oh, Amir Johnson. Although, is Amir Johnson?
He doesn't play that much, though.
Yeah, he hasn't been playing that much.
He did. That was one of their adjustments in this series, and it actually kind of worked out. So, like, he's not bad, I would say. But, yeah, I just don't expect him to see more than...
Yeah, he played 10 minutes today. He started and played 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I just don't expect him to
play. I wonder if something's going on there. That's weird. Well, okay, part of it is Kelly Olynyk had 26 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Yeah. He was 10 of 14 and dominated. Yeah, you didn't see his ridiculous fourth quarter where...
Yeah, I didn't watch.
Yeah, he was like ridiculous on defense, and it was something to see.
It's interesting because he does have that. Okay, for people who played more than 20 minutes or 20 minutes or more, he has the second best net rating on the team.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned to that before we started recording. I think part of that is because the Wizards bench is so bad, and he's the first guy off the bench for the Celtics, and so he gets to come in just as the Wizards bench is coming in. And yeah, like I said, the Wizards bench is bad, so he's getting some benefit of that. But you know, look, the numbers don't lie. What's the Celtics' coach? Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens obviously liked what he saw out of Olynyk over Amir Johnson tonight. So
his game is kind of interesting, right? Like, he's like the stretchy big four who mm-hmm. has a little more mobility than like other big fours or other stretch fours. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he can do some damage if he can get a little smoother when he drives the ball, because he just looks like a complete mess whenever he's trying to drive the ball.
Yeah, and in the fourth quarter today, he had like three. So, by the way, he was 8 of 8 on two-pointers tonight, which is really preposterous. No, it is not sustainable. He hucked up some wild stuff and it went in.
Yeah.
I hesitate to bring this up just because whatever. Is Kelly Olynyk worth worrying about from an injury perspective?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? No, not really. Like, the odds are just so low of that happening. And like, he is a little reckless. I don't know if he's dirty. Yeah. I don't want to talk about whether he is dirty or not, but I think it's hard to deny that he's reckless.
Well, let's say, just for the sake of argument, let's say he's in the sort of same camp as Zaza Pachulia and Bruce Bowen, right? Like, guys who sort of have a little bit of a reputation for being dirty.
Oh, those guys are dirty for sure. I don't know about him.
Okay, let's say that he is Bruce Bowen, right? Let's say the average chance of, you know, a player injuring another player over the course of a 7-game series is X. What is Kelly Olynyk's? 3x at most, maybe 2x?
Probably 2x, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, right? And like, they play 8 players, right? So you've gone from having 8x injury risk to now 9x, right? So it's not like a material, you know, you've increased your injury risk by 12% in that case. Like, it's not 13%. Like, it's not.
Sure.
Yeah. The reason why I bring it up is because, like, if you look on Twitter, like, every, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to face the Celtics because I'm afraid of Kelly Olynyk. It's like, come on. There's reasons to not want to play the Celtics, but I don't know if that's really one of them.
Yeah, but even a 12% risk of having one of your core guys injured is pretty bad, right?
Well, it's a 12% increased risk. I don't know what the risk. I don't think it's actually 12%. I have no idea what the risk is. Like, what's the risk of, like, a player getting, like... Who knows? You don't know the answer to this either. But like, over 4 games, like, how often does a player get injured to the point where he misses a game? I don't know. I don't know.
Outside of LeBron, our guys are a little, you know, they're a little injury prone. So
a little flimsy. Yeah. 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 I just don't want to see like Channing Frye, you know, twist a knee or something. It's me knocking.
Okay. I was like, is somebody outside?
No, that's me like furiously knocking to, I'm not superstitious at all, but some people are, so I don't want to get in trouble.
Also, it looks like every single game is just one day apart in the series. That's great.
Well, that's a lot of podcasting for us. I guess it's because it's starting so late.
Assuming we sweep, we should have a week before the next round, which is good.
Next round would be the NBA Finals.
Yeah, because that starts on June 1st, and the Game 4 is on May 23rd. Even if we go to Game 5, we still have 6 days before the next round, so it's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad. And then, yeah, even if it goes 6, they would still get 4
even
days.
Even if you go to 6 games, you still have like 4, yeah, exactly, like 4 days.
The problem with that is that now you have to fly back to Cleveland, and then you have to fly out to California. And it's...
Would they even go back to Cleveland? Wouldn't they just fly out to California?
I suspect...
Depends how long...
Geez. Yeah, so in that hypothetical, they're flying to... Actually, wait. No, because game six would be in Cleveland.
Yeah, so then they would just fly straight from there.
Perfect. Yeah, okay, so that's a little bit mildly good news. Okay, did you know that, so LeBron has been the number two seed six times, and he has made it the finals
every single time. Yeah.
Six times.
I saw that, So yeah, I'm not worried about that. I just don't think home court really matters to him in the East. Of course, I would love to have home court in the finals, but that's just not going to happen with that team, so.
Yeah. Who do you think the Celtics are going to try to guard LeBron James with?
Ooh, I think it's going to be Crowder. But again, as I was mentioning, Crowder plays 33 minutes a night. LeBron plays 43, and he might play more as we get deeper in the playoffs.
If it matters. So
if it matters, right, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, they're going to try Crowder. Probably, maybe they'll up it to 36, 37 max. I just don't think you can up it 10 more minutes. Crowder will not be able to sustain that production.
Crowder have a reputation at some point of being sort of a LeBron stopper?
No.
I started that rumor right now.
Yeah. I mean, like, people just, I don't even know where that term comes from. Like, even Kawhi Leonard, LeBron's had a lot of success again. So, like, it's not, there's no such thing as a LeBron stopper.
Yeah. I mean, and then after Crowder, I don't know what they do.
I mean, Jaylen Brown, that's the only guy I can think of that can physically sort of keep up.
Jaylen Brown's the right size, but he's not a very good basketball player yet. I mean, he showed all kinds of signs that are encouraging, but his RPM's like not even in the top half of the league. So he's not even an average NBA player
exactly.
yet.
So like, right. And then, or maybe they can try Marcus Smart, but like he's too small, right? Like he's strong enough, but he's too small.
Marcus Smart is stout and strong, but not tall enough.
Yeah. And again, like he doesn't need to be guarded on the other side. Like Cavs are just going to let him take as many shots as he wants. Even if he's hitting them, just take them, man. Who cares?
And then, the nice thing about Crowder is that that gives the Cavs a nice place to sort of try to hide Kyrie.
Or whoever. They can hide Kyrie. They can hide Korver, whoever they
Channing
want.
Channing Frye, Korver, whoever. Yeah, it's nice having a sort of zero. I mean, Amir Johnson doesn't do much offensively either. So
if he plays, I think they might go with like Olynyk at the five or something ridiculous. But
maybe. I mean, Amir Johnson played 20 minutes a game this year. I'm checking. Yeah, 20 minutes, 6 seconds a game.
Series in the playoffs, he's played, 11 minutes a game. Yeah, so it's been cut down.
Yeah, they're still starting him, but they're just getting Olynyk and Smart out there pretty quickly. I'm excited to see the Cavs' sort of surgical approach, especially as the series goes on, how they decide. I mean, they'll just hunt down Isaiah Thomas on
I think Thomas by far has the worst defensive rating on this team, which should come as no
surprise. Isn't he like, by RPM, like the third worst player in the league or something defensively?
He's bad. And like, it's not just RPM. You watch him. He can't do anything on switches.
Yeah, well, it might have something to do with him being like
5'7", 5'8". Yeah. He's not 5'9", either. Like a lot
by
of people
defensive RPM, Isaiah Thomas is the worst player in the NBA.
Yeah. And by offensive RPM, he's like third best or something, right?
And the magnitude of like how bad he is really interesting. So he's negative 4.08. The 10th worst guy, 1, 2, 3, the 11th worst guy... No, the 10th worst defensive player by RPM in the NBA is Trey Burke, and he has a negative 3.08. So, like, he's way, way worse. Like, he's worse than even the guys who are bad. Wiggins, by the way, is the 9th worst. Another conversation for another day. I mean, that is as spectacular as he is offensively, and he's the 4th best guy by offensive RPM in the NBA. He's just a sieve on defense, and I expect to see Kyrie Irving get back on track. Or I don't know if I expect that, but I'm excited to see if he can get back on track. And I think LeBron, especially as the series goes on, as it did against the Warriors, will just sort of like LeBron's seeked out. Is the past tense
sought,
of seeks?
Sought.
Oh yeah, as he sought out. Steph Curry in the finals, like, I mean, he'll definitely seek out Isaiah Thomas here. And I'm sort of excited to see. I think the Cavs can be, this might actually be the Cavs' best matchup offensively of the playoffs so far.
Offensively or defensively?
offense. Well, the Cavs will have the highest points per possession, could have the highest points per possession offense.
Which is ridiculous because they have 117 offensive rating, which would be best in NBA history.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's going to go down just because everything regresses to the mean. 48%, but yeah, I mean, I just don't know. Boston is going to have to score like crazy, and I don't think they can. And this is all sort of a long-winded way of me saying Cavs in five.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't be surprised if the Cavs end up sweeping them either. But I think in five is probably the safe answer here.
Yeah, six is probably the safest just because the game six is at home, is in Cleveland.
I think they're good enough where they can finish in four or five, yeah.
We haven't mentioned Kevin Love yet today. He's been a little bit...
sort of quiet.
Yeah, he's been a little bit quiet offensively. We talked about his rebounding and his defense has been the same, which is good. But he's been a little... I have some quotes from Tyronn Lue. Do you mind if I read them real quick?
No, go for it.
Okay, so Tyronn Lue said, just because Love's not scoring the basketball or whatever, defensively and rebounding the basketball, he's been great. For me, some of it's my fault because we haven't really featured him a lot because of the matchups we've had on other teams. He's been great. His whole mindset is winning, and that's what it's all about in the playoffs. In this next series, we have some matchups he can definitely take advantage of, and it's on me to make sure we do that. Now, we've heard Tyronn Lue say one thing, like, for example, I'm going to rest LeBron more this season and do another. So I'll be curious to hear how he walks back. We have some matchups he can definitely take advantage of if Kevin Love ends up not doing much more offensively. But anyway, he said it, and so it sounds like their intention is to.
Well, we know they're going to try it for one quarter. Let's see if they can keep it up for four quarters.
Well, they always try it for like the first three possessions.
They haven't tried that in the last series, though. I feel like they didn't even go to them in the first quarter. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some a couple things from Love, too. He said... he's saying what he said to Lue. I told him we're 8-0. I don't mind it. If I get 5 or 6 shots, if I get 15 shots, it don't matter to me as long as we win. I've been in this position before. We're having success, so I'm happy. I feel good.
So, yeah, I think that's a good answer, right? I mean, that's what you want to see from a guy who may not get a lot of shots in the finals, right?
Yeah.
And also, he's been efficient. So like that's all you care about. 59 true shooting percentage. I mean, ideally, maybe a little higher since it's on a low usage, but 59 is not bad by any means. So,
yeah, his usage is low. His field goal percentage is low. He's getting a decent quote unquote efficiency because he's getting to the line a lot, and that's good.
And he's shooting the three at a pretty decent rate too, if I remember correctly.
Right. He's making the three at a decent rate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Yeah. I hope what would be really nice is if he can have like a big game early in the series and then just sort of get back to sort of where he was. Look, he's not going to turn into a guy that shoots 18 shots a game and is, 63% true shooting percentage this year. He's sort of made incremental gains all 3 years in Cleveland. I still think that there's a bunch of untapped potential in Kevin Love, but I just don't expect them to figure out how to do that in the next 3 weeks. But I think he can get back to where he was during most of the regular season, and that is really valuable to the Cavs.
His three-point shooting in the playoffs has been ridiculous. So his first year, he shot 43%. He only played 4 games, so that's the caveat there. His next year, he shot 41.4%. This year, he's shooting 40.5%. So it's been about 40% every single year in the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's elite. I'd like to see him make layups, which seemed to be a struggle. But.
Which he didn't make in the series before, but yes, I do agree that more of that. Also, would love to see him cut down on those turnovers. Like, he should not be turning the ball over.
Yeah, that reminds me. Shoot, we're running out of time here, but we got a couple questions. The first one I think we can answer quickly. The reason why I thought of questions is because one of them pertains to Kevin Love, but I want to do that second. The first one, which I think we get through quickly. Do you think having Bogut would significantly improve our chances against the Warriors in the finals?
Not significantly. Maybe not even that much. Maybe 1 or 2% max, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of feel like him playing is a sign of things going badly. but we have no idea what having Bogut would have been like because we never got to see the Cavs play with him. Yeah. Well, for never's a little strong, but effectively never.
3 seconds or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
What's your next?
And shoot, I didn't copy and paste it right here. Basically, the question was the threat of Kevin Love's outlet pass. We talked about his outlet passes.
Oh, and yeah, I saw that email.
Whether they're efficient or not. And I was sort of saying, like, well, it seems like they result in turnovers a lot. When they don't result in turnovers, they probably result in like 1.8 points per possession or something really high. So you can tolerate a higher turnover rate there. The question asker was saying, like, yeah, and there's also the threat of those passes, and that creates some efficiency. Yeah, I didn't mention that. I thought that was sort of a good point.
Yeah, I would say, though, the threat is great, but then also don't pass when there's, like, two guys surrounding LeBron, right? Like, you still got to be a little selective. And if there's two guys surrounding LeBron, that means the threat already exists because they're already running with him, so, right? Right?
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes. It does make sense. Those outlet passes are fun. I still have a sneaking suspicion that...
If you're selective with them, you can make them.
Yeah, obviously, if he makes it so that they're always perfect 100% of the time, then it's definitely worth it. But yeah, there's a lot of them turn into turnovers, and I wish there was a way I could count. Maybe I should like just start counting when I watch games.
Yeah, there's not that many of them, so like you could probably just write it down on a piece of paper or something.
Yeah, but I'll forget or I'll miss one, and because the sample size is so small, missing one will be sort of a big deal. There's one other question here. There's a couple more questions. And I don't think we're going to have time to get to them. We only have about, I don't know, another 2 minutes here. But I think this is a good question to finish on. I know it's early to talk about odds versus Warriors, but I'm wondering what you think our chances are this year relative to last year. And this guy said, I'm feeling about the same in the playoffs as I was in last year's, possibly a tiny bit worse because of Durant. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I think we're a little better this year, to be honest with you, but they're also obviously much better. So I think it's about the same, to be honest with you. Like, there is some embarrassment of riches on the other side, right? Like, having Durant is nice, but they were also still a very, very, very lethal offensive team. So, like,
right,
there are some diminishing returns when you add.
Yeah, it's interesting. Adding a league MVP made them incrementally better offensively and incrementally better defensively. But yeah, they're basically at peak performance for an NBA team. So yeah, I mean, Durant is scary and he's an outstanding player, but it's not like adding an MVP to the Sixers, right? If you added Kevin Durant to the Sixers, they'd probably win 25 more games. Adding Kevin Durant to the Warriors, I think they won 67 games this year. So they lost.
But they had a better net rating.
I know. But yeah, I mean, they're sort of like near the ceiling of what a team can be. I'm not feeling great about the Cavs' chances, but last year I was super.
I mean, we were down 2-0 and 3-1, so like that was probably the worst possible situation.
But even going into the series, I think the Cavs had like a 20% chance. And this year, I would say I think it's more like a third. I think they have like a 30-35% chance.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too, 30-35. Maybe these series will change my mind more, but yeah. 30-35 is actually not bad. Like against probably possibly the best team ever. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's all you can hope for. And that might get bumped up based on what they do against the Celtics here. Like, if Kyrie suddenly looks like back to form,
and like, that'd be great. And if like, say Kawhi comes back and they look a little vulnerable, we'll change it up. Yeah.
All right. I'm excited for game one. It's been a long time.
It's been more than a week.
Yeah. So, all right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba. I live tweet every game. I think it's a super compelling follow. Excuse my bias. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs.